Welcome to The Backbone, a journey inside finance at a startup. I'm your host, Shubham Datta, at Shubham on Twitter. On The Backbone, we're obsessed with finance and operations at startups. We take a close look at finance functions within various startup companies by talking to finance leaders that are in there day in and day out. We chat startup finance, metrics, operations, and everything in between. Joining me on this episode of The Backbone is Matt Dove, VP of Finance at Celtix, a provider of all-in-one cloud-based platform for writing, planning, and production of film, video, and digital media projects. Celtix is trusted by millions of users from across all sectors of the industry to help them bring their ideas from concept to camera. Matt has led Celtix finance and operations department since 2015. He works closely with senior management and the board to help drive strategic direction for growth. Matt is an advocate for using technology to simplify workflows and has been dedicated to helping Celtix achieve its goal of bringing collaborative workflows to the media creation industry. And so, without further ado, let's hear from Matt Dove, VP of Finance of Celtix. Hey, good morning, Matt. Thanks for jumping on The Backbone this morning. And so let's get started right away. You know, prior to your role at Celtix, you were at PwC in Nova Scotia, then you went to Australia with PwC, and then back to Canada in Newfoundland. So talk to me about your journey to Celtix and how you got started in the tech space.
Yeah, Shubham, thanks for having me on the Backbone today. Yeah, you're exactly right. I had a great run with PwC. Like you say, it was 3 years in Nova Scotia, and then 6 years in Brisbane, Australia, and then 3 years back in here in Atlantic Canada, Newfoundland. And, you know, overall, I can't say enough about the experience that one gains through that sort of firm environment. But at the time, you know, I guess, you know, over those number of years that accumulated, I was looking to experience something else, experience, you know, operations of a company, get inside and, you know, understand, you know, what it looks like from that side, I suppose. You know, what I was really looking for at that time was, you know, I wanted to be part of a growing company, something that I was looking for a bit of an adventure, I guess, or to be part of something new at the time. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to be part of, I was sort of eyeing up the technology industry, keenly interested in getting into that space, you know, being part of the sort of, you know, sort of an industry of the future rather than sort of an industry of the past. So at the time I had sort of through the informal job market had understood that Celtix was looking for a finance leader at the time. So I did what I could to sort of get myself in front of the co-founder CEO. And we had a great chat. We followed up again a week later or something and another great chat. And then I joined the team on one of their sort of Celtix Day outings they were having. And that, you know, seemed like a great team, a great place to work, interesting industry to get involved in. So that was it. I joined the team. That was in April of 2015. So here we are 3 years later, grown tremendously since that time. We've gone from a team of 15 to a team of 36. Grown our monthly recurring revenues by 3x. And you know what? I'm still pretty excited about what we're doing. We've got a few great things in the hopper and really looking forward to the rest of 2018 and then into next year and see what we can do.
That's awesome. So talk to me a little bit about Celtix itself. What is Celtix all about and how does it all work?
So at Celtix, we focus on production tools, production planning tools for the creative media industry. So by creative media industry, I mean video, basically. Video in all of its formats. So someone who's making video for TV, for advertising, for movies, branded content, might be in-house teams at a large multinational company. They're maybe making internal training videos or some of their own advertising. So we provide what I'll call the pick and shovel type tools, you know, to plan a video production. So those are tools that take the team from sort of formation of an idea through script writing, through the breakdown phase, into sort of catalog formation, and finally onto scheduling and budgeting. So, you know, if you see the white trucks on the side of the road, you know, doing a shoot, we provide all the tools the team need up to that point in time. So that takes you through sort of the development, the pre-production, and then into the production phase. There's a few phases of the of that media creation process that happen after that, sort of the post-production, so the various editing and special effects, and then into distribution. We don't do anything in those last two phases. We sort of end at that production phase. Gotcha. But what we do for that industry is we bring sort of modern tools that give the users, you know, things that modern teams have come to expect, like real-time collaboration and internal integrated workflows, and you know, platform that dynamically updates across teams for edits that's been made by one person or the other, supported by a series of mobile apps, 5OS, 4 Android, and 2 OS X apps. So that gives the users the ability to sort of work where they want and when they want. Our customers are focused in the sort of production companies, advertising agencies, large brands, schools and universities, and finally some gaming companies.
Very cool. And so as part of the pre-production process, you know, can you talk to me a little bit more about like the software itself? It helps, to my understanding, helps plan, you know, where something is going to take place, like the scene, the environment of an event. And then does it also go into like making sure the cast can get there, whoever needs to get there, all the like scheduling, the pick and shovel, as you say, really doing that in as part of a software environment, as opposed to, I guess, what happens like if someone doesn't use Celtix? Do they use like pen and paper? Like, what's the alternative, I guess?
You're sort of right there that there's a lot of pen and paper and a lot of odd hacked together sort of processes that that are used currently in the industry. There's some technology brought to bear on sort of early phases like script writing, and there's some technology brought to bear at the sort of end of the process, like in the scheduling and budgeting aspects of the industry. But they're proprietary data formats, and they don't speak to each other well, and they leave a lot of the people in the middle of the process with no technology at all. So that's where, you know, as you point out, paper and, you know, various tools like that that aren't optimal for modern teams.
Mm-hmm. I'm not very familiar with the kind of media pre-production space. And one of the things that you mentioned was really kind of eye-opening to me is you said that, you know, the software helps manage things like, you know, you always don't record all your scenes in sequence, right? So you may record, call it episode 5 before you record episode 2. And then the fact that there's someone has a gash on their face in episode 5, but doesn't have that in episode 2, that's something that like I wouldn't have thought of as something that's the pre-production phase or the software would need to accommodate for. What are some of these unique nuances that, you know, an average Joe wouldn't consider, but being in this space, these are some of the things that software has to help guide and aid?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So the software helps you understand the story day of the you know, of the shoot. So, you know, as you rightfully pointed out, sometimes you're shooting, you know, all of the the scenes that happen sort of down by the water's edge, perhaps, and on that day, you know, it might be scene 5, scene 22, and scene 35. But depending on the weather, you might need to do it in reverse order because you might need the morning, you know, the shoot from scene 35 might happen early in the morning. You need that sun coming up over the water. You know, unfortunately, you know, he has a cut on his face then that doesn't need to be there earlier in right. the day. So you got to put a cut on his face and then you got to take a cut back off of his face. So that's where the teams come involved that track the sort of story continuity there. That's, I guess, the key piece here is managing all the assets. Mm-hmm. You know, if you go buy a a film shoot, you'll notice that there's a lot of people, a lot of yelling a lot of times. And that's because there's a lot of disorganization a lot of times. So there's a lot of last minute requests that, oh, well, you know, we need a stapler, or no, we don't have our stapler on set today. We, you know, somebody go to the store and get a stapler, or somebody go get a table, or we need a, you know, an 1800s era sword. Where are we going to surface that from? So it leads to a lot of inefficiencies. And the calling card of the, you know, sort of catchphrase or backup plan is, you know, fix it in post. So a lot of times, you know, do what we can and then use some editing tools to fix it in post is a way they work around that, but not the most optimal way of doing that. So what Celtics allows is a better platform for planning each of the individual sort of assets that are going to need to be there on set that day, and making sure all the teams are working from a common platform, a common sort of database of props and assets, making sure that the actors and the talents know where they need to be, when they need to be there, and that the teams know what sort of assets to bring along on that day.
You know, Celtics, to my understanding, is used by over 10,000 teams across 190 countries. And so when you have such a large number of customers like this with a self-serve pricing model, in an organization like this with such scale, such as Celtics, what factors do you take into account when thinking about customer acquisition? How do you think about that as a finance leader?
I guess I'll start that off. Or, you know, customer acquisition tends not to be a significant focus of ours, and that's because we've over the years developed a pretty solid brand in the industry, and we'll gain somewhere in the range of 50,000 to 60,000 new accounts, new verified accounts every month.
Oh wow!
And those all come organically from word of mouth. We don't do any advertising. So that's the sort of inbound on a regular basis. So our challenge isn't so much customer acquisition, but it's sifting through volume of new customers, new accounts, to understand the customers that need the most help. You know, there might be these teams coming on that have maybe unique workflows, and they need help in sort of customizing to their workflow, or they might bring a large project and they need help getting that onboarded, or they need team members brought on. So we try to focus on those. Those tend to be the business users, large schools coming on. So we try to get those to the surface. And then aside from that, we try to depend on the smooth onboarding that we've created in the application to help the volume of users get on and get productive.
Makes sense. And so in an industry like this, I would think that, you know, after someone's done recording their, you know, show or their episodes or whatnot, they're done for the season, what do they do with Celtics? They, you know, as you said, it's pre-production. And so do they kind of turn off the subscription, and then until they need to come back, they head on back and sign up again? Or how does that work, especially when you think about things such as churn and customer lifetime value? How do you take those kind of nuances and factors into account?
That's spot on. There's we do see a cyclical patterns in our user base, both from acquisition and activity. And this time of year, as we get into the summer months, tend to be our slower months, where shoots are happening. The productive months of the year, sort of January, February, March, even into April. That's when we tend to see the sort of highest volumes of activities. We would certainly encourage and hope our users continue to keep active on the platform, but keep their subscriptions active. You know, you're spot on there in terms of monitoring churn and sort of helping with LTV and overall metrics. I think one of the key things there is we've been discounting and encouraging annual subscriptions,
right?
And that sort of does keep people with the basis that everything's active, and it sort of works better with their I think their budgeting, but also just the way they use the tool.
Right, right. Because once you've paid for it all up front, you kind of forget that it's there and you have the ability to just use it as you need it versus thinking about consciously, okay, I'm going to turn it off this month and turn it back on. And so, no, that makes sense. And then one last question on this part. What are some of the other metrics that you would say are important to track when you have such a large volume of customers like Celtics does? You know, a small number of customers versus if you think about more of an enterprise model where you have maybe a few hundred customers versus, you know, 10,000 teams using it.
Yeah, I think, you know, a key thing for us is that we end up needing to really sort of bucket the customers and look at their individual attributes and sort of try to take them in that way. When we have this sort of large number of users, one thing that, you know, tends to is that stats tend to normalize themselves. So, you know, if we introduce something new or if we take a look at a metric that we haven't been looking at, it tends to, you know, the volume of the numbers tend to show patterns pretty quickly. So we're able to sort of look at those larger metrics and then understand if there's any sort of issues there, we can sort of dig in deeper. But to your question more specifically, one thing that's that we found to be critically important is the early engagement. As a self-onboarding tool, you know, the tool needs to be completely intuitive. You know, we need to try to minimize friction for those people that are onboarding themselves in their office environment and you know with little assistance. So we've been, you know, one of the stats we look at is the activity in the first 60 seconds of a user's experience, and we try to we've been optimizing and trying to measure the activity there, not the nuance of activity, just the, you know, how long are they continuing to be active for. And making sure that we're smoothing out that process as much as we can. Other than that, I would say that it's just a very detailed understanding of your funnel. You know, from our perspective, you know, that starts with visits to the websites, accounts created, then accounts verified, and then those who've gotten in and created a project, and then ongoing activity down through to a subscription. Summarizing there's a lot of sort of course, small points that happen in between, but it's really understanding all of the sort of conversion percentages that are happening as that funnel narrows, and then looking to find ways to get more to go down through the funnel.
Yeah, no, I totally get it. And you know, I could spend all day talking about this stuff. But, you know, for the interest in time, let's jump back now to talk about you. And, you know, so what's been kind of your biggest challenge for you moving from a professional services firm like PwC to a growing tech company like Celtics? What's that transition been like for you?
I think the transition's been fantastic. But, you know, in terms of challenges or things that I noticed that were different, you know, at a growing technology company like Celtics, you know, it's fair to say that especially in the sort of operations and finance side of things, everything isn't sort of pull out of the box ready. If you're in an established firm, there's a pretty good understanding of the metrics and the systems and how things operate. Whereas in a rapidly growing organization like Celtics, that things are metrics and systems and processes are constantly evolving. And so it's been a matter of trying to understand, okay, how would we optimize this process? What's the best way to set this up? And, you know, oftentimes is, you know, what is the optimal way to set up a process today? You know, you give it a couple months and something else has changed, which, you know, renders that solution suboptimal. So then it's revisit, reiterate, and go again. I think the other piece I would touch on there is the pace. The pace of the firm, you know, it's focused on, you know, it's project based and focused on short deadlines. And it's not right. It's not abnormal to sort of fixate on one project for a long period of time. Whereas at Celtics, it's more about the long-term goals. It's more about making sure that sort of everything is, you know, staying on track. So, you know, you might use the analogy of a sprint versus a marathon in that perspective.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so what would you say you have loved most about the change?
Perhaps not recording my time in 6-minute intervals. I'm sure you can relate there. Putting my own process in place, that's one of the things that I was looking for, an organization that that didn't have really a finance function in place. It was pretty nascent, anything that was here when I started. So it's sort of putting that in place. But then, next to that is being in an organization where you can see end-to-end in business process. It's not abnormal in a given day, or certainly in a week, for me to be involved in things that are from HR, legal, finance, of course, some aspects of operations, sales, and customer support. So you really sort of get a full understanding of an organization. At the firm, I find that in some respects, you're seeing a small slice of a larger pie, with perhaps an ability to influence the even smaller elements of that slice. Whereas Celtics, right. Have got a regular influence on strategy and direction, and not only the influence on that, but the ability to sort of monitor and look at how that's being put into place, and be part of the reiteration that we might do on that process, mm-hmm. as we try to see how to optimize. And then I think the last thing at a growing technology company is experimentation. It's in the DNA of a technology company to experiment, and I really enjoy that.
Makes sense. And so that's a great segue into our last question before the quickfire round here. And so you touched on some of these already, but what would you say are the most important aspects of a finance leader or the finance function within a technology company?
I think I would cite two things. Other than the obvious, of course, around making sure payroll gets made and bills get paid. That kind of thing, of course, the obvious there, but I think that's not exactly where you're headed with this. I think I would say that the finance function is an info hub. And then second to that, I would say that it sort of supports operations. So I'll just elaborate on that a little bit more.
Yeah, thinking. Please.
But as an info hub, as a technology company, there's a lot of data points that that can be sort of collected and observed. It's a matter of taking that data and understanding, what has ultimate impact on sort of growth and dollars down the line. And then understanding, what of that kind of becomes part of your KPIs. In terms of supporting operations, I think that the finance function becomes a bit of a sort of a flex department, if you will, to fill gaps on the team or roles that haven't been yet filled in the organization. As I mentioned before, that's filling in on gaps in HR, legal, admin, operations, etc. So one of the things that sort of an attribute of a successful finance function in an organization like this, I think, is agility. You need to sort of have an open mind to be agile between what you thought you might be doing that week and what you're actually doing.
That's interesting. I really like the analogy and the concept of the info hub. Never really thought of it that way. It's always common to hear about finance kind of serving a lot of different parts of the organization and having visibility as a finance leader across the entire organization. But thinking about it from that info hub mentality really brings everything home. That's really cool. What I'd like to do now is jump into our quickfire round. And so the way this works is I'll ask you a question and you'll have 10 to 15 seconds to respond to each. How does that sound?
That sounds good.
All right, let's do it. So what's your go-to online resource for all things startup finance related?
I would cite two there, Jason Lemkin and his Saster, and David Skok and his Four Entrepreneurs blog there.
Got it. Very good resources, both. Your favorite productivity hack?
Oh, geez. Coffee and a good pair of noise-canceling headphones.
Nice. Cool. It puts you in Zen mode and you're ready to go.
Exactly.
What's one thing you don't leave the office before finishing?
I don't leave the office without sort of reviewing the day's metrics, the sales, the churn, the, each of the metrics of that day. I sort of try to make sure I have a pulse on that before I'm gone.
Got it. And just to double click on that, do you have real-time dashboard or some sort of dashboard in place? You just check it out right at the end and then... Got it.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Gotcha. And so what's one tech jargon that makes you cringe?
Oh, geez. I think it would have to be some of the job titles that you're hearing these days, like customer support ninja and innovation Sherpa, and, you know, digital marketing guru or something like that. It's those kind of those titles that, that sort of give me the goosebumps.
and things like, you know, in a small organization, especially at an early stage of a startup, titles don't mean a lot. You're, like you said, you're trying to do as many things, wear as many hats as possible to grow the organization. So, yeah,
exactly.
And lastly here, what's the best advice you've received so far in your career?
I think it's about focus, time management. You know, it's been said to me a few times, you know, you come in a week and it's, you know, what are the key sort of two or three things that you need to achieve that week in order to push the organization ahead? You know, it's not getting sort of confused by all the sort of little micro to-dos that are, you know, almost borderline busy work to get on your to-do list. But those two or three things that if you, you know, when you get to the end of the week, if you have those done, then you're satisfied that you've sort of done your job and pushed things in the right direction.
Gotcha. That's really good advice there. Listen, Matt, it's been a pleasure chatting with you, talking about your journey to Celtics, learning more about Celtics itself, you know, how it's different serving thousands of customers as opposed to hundreds of customers, and thinking through different metrics that are relevant to Celtics. Also learning about your transition from PwC to Celtics and what that's been all about. And so this entire chat has been a really pleasure to have you on, and thanks so much for doing this again.
Thanks, Jabam. It's been a pleasure, and we'll talk again soon.
All right. Thanks a lot, Matt. Bye now.
Bye now.